Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael, and I'm reading the front page of the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Saturday, April 1st. Midland among most dynamic cities. Heartland Forward study shows Midland ranked 6th out of 382 metropolitan areas ranked nationwide by Stuart Doreen. A Heartland Forward study showed Midland is one of the most dynamic metropolitan areas in the nation. The study showed Midland to be 6th of the 382 metropolitan areas ranked nationwide. The rankings were to determine those communities that are leading in categories including employment, income, economic production, and the ability to start and scale young firms. This index captures both historic and forward-looking indicators, enabling cities to evaluate policies impacting local economic performance. Midland joined Austin Round Rock, ranked 4th, as the lone Texas metropolitan areas in the top 25 across the United States in 2022. The top 5 metropolitan areas, according to the study, were San Jose, Sunnyvale, Santa Clara, California, Silicon Valley, Elkhart, Goshen, Indiana, San Francisco, Oakland, Berkeley, California, Austin, and the Villages, Florida. The rankings of other West Texas communities included Abilene at 175th, San Angelo at 218th, Lubbock at 223rd, Amarillo at 257th, and Odessa at 305th. American populations that embrace innovation, invest in outdoor recreation, and attract employers that lift an area's overall quality of life are among the most dynamic in today's post-COVID economy, a news report about the study said. The following was written about Midland in the report. Midland rebounded from 38th to 6th, courtesy of a recovery in oil prices and resurgence of exploration. However, the upturn in energy fortunes has not translated into a commensurate surge in jobs and overall economic activity. Producers have redirected much of the improved cash flow towards debt reduction and share repurchases rather than tapping new reservoirs. Nevertheless, Midland saw job growth of 9.1% from June 2021 to June 2022, best across all metros, and even surpassed Silicon Valley with the highest per capita income when adjusted for regional price parity. Midland is more closely tied to the fortunes of the oil industry than any other U.S. metro area. It is the capital of the Permian Basin, which produces 1 in 5 barrels of oil in the country. Support activities for mining, along with oil and gas extraction, are 102.6 and 86.6 times more concentrated than for the nation overall, respectively. Mining represents 23.2% of total employment in Midland and has average annual earnings of $173,000. As oil prices began to recover and sanctions were placed on Russian oil exports, demand for Permian Basin production has climbed. In January 2023, the basin produced a record 5.6 million barrels of oil per day, and improved transportation has the Permian exerting more influence on global oil pricing than ever before. Other important sectors include healthcare, ranching, and agriculture. Economic development officials are attempting to diversify Midland's economy as aerospace is being targeted for expansion. It has a niche in testing and qualification of payloads, space and pressure suits, and trains new flight crews. Midland has a high level of entrepreneurship, ranking 6th in the proportion of jobs at firms and business less than 6 years. Heartland Forward is a nonpartisan nonprofit think and do tank focused on improving economic performance in the center of the United States, according to the organization's website. Heartlandforward.org. Sterling Stock Shows Star Adds to Family Tradition by Stuart Doreen. When Tristan Hines' 1,348-pound steer named Astro was named Reserve Grand Champion at the 2023 Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. It added some cash in his bank account and another chapter to his family's history. Astro sold for $540,000. Himes will keep $40,000 to help pay for college. But it's the titles that have added up for Tristan and his family. Matter of fact, if there is a family in the Permian Basin that knows showing steers, it's Tristan's. One could say it's a family tradition. Tristan left Houston having exhibited his second reserve and grand champion steer. In 2022, he exhibited Happy to champion status. It was his sixth grand and or reserve grand champion his family took home for one of the biggest stock shows in the state. Tristan's mother, Cody Newman Horwood, showed off Ringer to a grand championship in 1984. Cousins Flint and Dakota Newman earned grand champion banners in 2005 and 2013, respectively, while Uncle Kevin Newman started the success in Houston with the reserve title in 1980. "I'm so proud of what our family has accomplished," Tristan said. "There have been generations before and shows on the ranch since the 1930s. Without the family, I would not have had the success I've had." Tristan's success includes grand champion steer titles in San Antonio, 2015, Dallas, 2017, Odessa, 2018, San Angelo, 2019, Austin, 2021, Fort Worth, 2022, and Oklahoma City, 2022. Generally, a grand champion doesn't get to exhibit at a stock show once her or she has won a grand champion there, Tristan said, probably explaining there aren't more titles to his name. If Tristan became master of the show stick, the golf club length club with a hook and point used to move a steer and keep calm, with his seven grand championships and four reserve titles, it is because he followed in the footsteps of his mother. Cody Newman Horwood claimed seven grand championships, including a run in 1984 when she, as a Martin County 4-H member, exhibited steers and titles in Denver, Fort Worth, San Antonio, and Houston. She also boasted titles in Odessa, 1982, El Paso, 1985, and San Angelo, 1987. Combined, the family has 21 grand champion and 13 reserve champion titles since 1974. The herd of steers Tristan has shown to champion status have included Astro, Happy, Ace, Tex, Steve, Nugget, 10-4, and Pete. At least three came from Uncle Kevin, whose head of cattle include the high quality needed to show, Tristan recalled. Just one aspect of showing animals that is family-oriented. The commitment required includes practicing showmanship, including being able to use the show stick to move a steer around, feeding, grooming, and giving the animals anything else on a daily basis needed to stay healthy. That process, according to Tristan, also includes making sure a show steer is put in the barn before the sun comes up. "If you leave them out in the sun, they will get sunspots and impact their hide," Tristan said. "They remain in the barn all day until the sun goes down, and then they are turned out." When they go to a show like Houston, the steer is tended to 24 hours a day until after the show. Tristan said during the trip to Houston in March, the family arrived at 1 a.m. on a Tuesday, and until after Friday night, somebody was with Astro tending to his every need. "If you are not dedicated, you will not be successful," his mother said. Tristan is competitive. When he's not claiming titles on the stock show circuit, he might be found on the football field, where he has performed an all-state level for the Sterling City High School during its state championship run in six-man and during its first year as an 11-man program. Heim stands 5'11" and 200 pounds. The linebacker fullback enjoys competition and success, whether on the gridiron or inside the ring. "You get out there, and for me, your competitive side takes over," Tristan said of showing. "It turns into a game. You get your adrenaline going." Having won his first major title in the fifth grade in San Antonio in 2016, Tristan knows his way around a competition, including obstacles to avoid. His experience has won him titles and scholarship money for college. He plans on attending Texas Tech University. He wants to go to medical school, but will start his collegiate career in Tech's ag department. Not surprisingly, he will be joined by many students he met in shows across the state. Exhibiting will help Tristan pay the bills. Cody Newman Horwood said payouts included $310,000 last year in Fort Worth, a rodeo which still gives all proceeds from the sale to the student. Newman Horwood commented that the cap in Houston made the $540,000 sale of Astro to the Champagne Cowgirls a little deceiving. Most of the sale rewards a young Texas 4-H and FFA students for their hard work year-round, according to the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo website. Interestingly, Tristan's $40,000 was less than his uncle received 43 years prior, and $110,000 less than his mother in 1984. Still, it isn't just about money or the titles. Not in this family. Participating in 4-H and showing steers is what the family have done for generations. "My career has been successful," Tristan said. "We try to stay humble about it all. We have friends that have respect for us." Biz Buzz. "I'd Rather Bake" finds its place in Midland. By Ben Schaefer. Sarah Babbles turned her lifelong passion into a business in 2020 when she created I'd Rather Bake, a bakery that now operates out of Sergeant Pepper's at 3200 North Garfield Street. Originally, Babbles wanted to open her own space and teach baking classes. She met the owner of Sergeant Pepper's, a Midland gift shop, and the two became friends and discussed the idea of combining the two businesses. Over time, the identity of I'd Rather Bake evolved from teaching classes to baking cakes, cookies, brownies, and more. Customers can find baked goods on sale in the store or ask for custom orders. Babbles and her family moved to Midland from North Texas around 3 years ago. She claimed she's always enjoyed baking, and as a mother of five, she was able to do it a lot. This gave her the ability to make corrections and evolve as a baker over time. "There were a couple of things where I was like, oh, I could have done this better. And so it was kind of like that. I just kept playing with it and trying different things and learning different things, and I just fell in love with it," Babbles said. The title of the bakery, I'd Rather Bake, is a shortened version of the phrase, "I love to cook, but I'd rather bake." There's just something about baking and the thought behind it. It's like comfort. Nobody's ever going to be sad when you bring them a plate of cookies or something. "I've just always, even as a kid, I've loved to bake," she said. Midland's support of small business has helped I'd Rather Bake find their place. Babbles said this area is more supportive of small business than any place she's ever lived. Babbles was nervous about staffing when she opened her business because she wanted to make sure I'd Rather Bake's bakers shared the same love for the product that she did. They have alleviated that concern. "Now we're in a good place where I feel like I could step away, like go to my daughter's tennis match, and know that everything's going to be okay," she remarked. Above all, Babbles finds the greatest joy in seeing her customers' reaction to their desserts and the kindness that has been shown to her passion-turned business.
Bynum School receives $50,000 donation from Shell Energy Resources. Bynum School received a $50,000 check from Shell Energy Resources' 6th annual Tee Off for Bynum charity golf tournament held on March 17th at Hogan Golf Park in Midland. Since 2018, the tournament has raised over $300,200 for Bynum School. "We can't express how grateful we are for Jeff and Miranda Kennedy of Shell Energy Resources, the players and sponsors, for supporting Bynum School," Bynum School Development Director Tracy Bush said. "Thanks to their generosity, we will be able to continue to meet our students' academic, behavioral, and vocational needs." Since 1984, Bynum School has educated students with special needs and unique abilities and backgrounds. Bynum provides an individualized approach that offers support and facilitates attainable opportunities. Every program that Bynum School offers enhances lives and expands the futures of our students and their families. For more information, visit www.bynumschool.org. Community National Bank, West Texas National Bank, join forces. This week, two local community banks came together to support a mission to improve the lives of teachers, first responders, and Midland Memorial medical staff in Midland by providing affordable housing opportunities. The Hillcrest Village Housing Development, instituted by the Midland Community Development Corps, is a new, mixed-purpose, single-family housing development on 19.8 acres that will provide affordable homes for sale to two groups: home buyers meeting HUD income guidelines and home buyers who are Midland Independent School District teachers, Midland Memorial Hospital staff, and City of Midland first responders. Community National Bank and West Texas National Bank, both known for their philanthropic efforts in the Permian Basin, each donated $25,000 to the Hillcrest Village project. Chris Wiggum, president and CEO of West Texas National Bank, said, "West Texas National Bank is pleased to support the efforts of MCDC as they develop this project to provide affordable homes for many of the people who serve our Midland community. This is consistent with a pillar of our mission, to serve the communities where we do business. We are honored to join the effort of MCDC to make this happen." Brad Bullock, Community National Bank COO and MCDC Board President, said, "With a project this large in scope, it takes so many entities in the community working together to make it happen. Everyone participating certainly has their own opinions of how to make the community a stronger place. But we put those individual agendas aside to accomplish something greater together than we could ever accomplish alone. Total contributions to this project total $1.9 million to help defray the costs of the infrastructure for the neighborhood." David Diaz, executive director of MCDC, said, "Using foundation support, the support of our local banking community, and the donation from Framing Square, we pour all of that into Hillcrest Village to keep the price down on these homes to make them truly affordable." Goddard accepting entries for Raider Car Show fundraiser. Goddard Junior High School is accepting entries for its fourth annual Raider Car Show, scheduled for April 8th. Goddard math teacher and car show organizer Emily Butterfield said the event is a fundraiser for the school. It costs $20 to enter a vehicle into the competition. "It's always exciting to see the variety of car show entries," Butterfield said. "Some years have included buses, trucks, motorcycles, and cars. All the money we raise goes directly to supporting students for events such as honor roll incentives, field day, and academic activities." The school is hoping for 20 to 40 entrants. Categories include original car, 1900 to present, street rod, modified car, motorcycle, original truck, 1900 to present, other, and best of show. The award show is scheduled for 1:30 p.m. Butterfield said the car show has been on hiatus due to the pandemic, but the school is excited to host the show once again. "We host the show as a way to have more community involvement in our schools and allow students and parents to connect in a positive way with teachers in the building," she said. The car show is also full of teachable moments. Car shows have been shown to help make attendees more informed and confident when purchasing their own vehicles. "And our students benefit by hearing detailed descriptions of vehicles, which improves their writing. And they see the historical connections of the automotive industry by seeing how cars have changed over time," Butterfield explained. Entrants can enter the show via QR code on the Goddard Facebook page. The Raider Car Show will be held from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. April 8th at the school and is free to attend. Hamburger plates will be available for $5. GJHS is located at 2500 Haynes Avenue. HEB surprises Legacy High School life skills teacher as award finalist. Legacy High's Kathleen Leeper wins $1,000, selected as leadership category candidate. Kathleen Leeper and her students received quite a surprise this week when H.E. Buddy and others entered her classroom with a big check in tow. When I saw H.E. Buddy come through the door, I knew something special was about to happen, Leeper said. Leeper, who teaches life skills at Legacy High School, was chosen as a finalist to receive HEB's Excellent in Education Award for Leadership. On March 20th, representatives from the Texas-based grocery chain visited Leeper in her classroom to make the big announcement and award her $1,000. The campus also received $1,000. This is the second time Leeper has been an Excellence in Education finalist. She previously was nominated by a student's parents in the Rising Star category during her time as a special education teacher at Milam Elementary. This year, she was nominated by a fellow teacher in the leadership category, which honors educators with 10 to 20 years of experience. Leeper has worked 13 years in education, the past six at LHS. The entirety of her career has focused on special education. Leeper says she was drawn to special education because she has a special needs child herself. What keeps her dedicated to these students is overcoming the false idea that they have plateaued. The goal of life skills classes is to train them to have good lives, Leeper said. It's our job to not give up on them and think that they've plateaued. We as adults are never done learning, she added. If we can learn new things, so can our kids. We teach them wherever they are. Midland West Rotary donates to three local organizations. Midland West Rotary made a trio of donations recently to Basin Dream Center for Orphans, Sibley Nature Center, and the Black Student Union at Midland High School. A $1,500 donation went to Basin Dream Center for Orphans to be used for mental health services for clients. A $2,000 donation went to Sibley Nature Center to be used toward the purchase of a utility trailer, and a $1,000 donation went to the Black Student Union at Midland High School to be used for student visits to three Texas historically Black universities and colleges. Midland West Rotary's Dictionary Drive. Midland West Rotary donated dictionaries to the Greenwood ISD Dyslexia Program earlier this month. Paul Strohall, president of Midland West Rotary, along with members Andrew Mellon, Harold Howard, Roy Nelson, and Cindy White, met with Mrs. Piverall, Mrs. Anderson, Mrs. Kendrick, of the 504 Dyslexia Coordinator, and Miss Bennett, principal. The teachers and students will be using the dictionaries as part of the program. Upon graduation from the four-unit program, each student will be presented a dictionary to keep. SRSU at MC Grad recalls Journey to Chemist Career by Rebecca Bell, Midland College. Abigail Abby Collins discovered that she enjoyed conducting laboratory analysis and research when she was a Midland College and Sol Ross State University, SRSU, student from 2009 to 2015. Today, she is a technical chemist at Champion X, an oil and gas service company where she designs safe, effective, and affordable water treatment solutions for Permian Basin oil fields. It's a great job, Collins said. Most of the work I do is project-based, so I have a good deal of independence in setting my own schedule. Independence is a theme in Collins' life. In fact, she said that the reason she enrolled at MC after graduating from high school a year earlier than her peers was that it allowed her a certain amount of independence. I attended Lee High School, now Legacy High School, Collins explained. I was never involved in many extracurricular activities. Even though I was a good student, I was bored. So during my junior year, I participated in an accelerated curriculum program and was able to graduate a year early. That meant that I was only 17 and wasn't ready to venture too far from home. I started taking courses at MC and lived on campus in O'Shaughnessy Hall. That gave me the freedom of living away from home, even though I still went to my mom's house two or three times a week, especially when it was time to do my laundry. I was taking prerequisites for nursing, which meant that I took a lot of science lab courses, and I really liked those courses. One day, I found out about the Sol Ross at MC program, where I could take courses and earn a bachelor's degree in biology from SRSU on the MC campus. Midland College students in the Sol Ross at MC program learn remotely on the MC campus via interactive TV, virtual classrooms, or through web-based courses. Some of the MC professors teach the hands-on lab courses. Students may transfer more than 80 credit hours of coursework from Midland College to SRSU and are eligible for financial aid and scholarships. Collins said that she attended MC on the Legacy Scholarship and then received scholarships from SRSU when she transferred, which made college very affordable. I'm not sure if I would have graduated from college had I not taken the MC and SRSU routes, Collins said. I really enjoyed the small class sizes and camaraderie I had with my classmates and professors. The professors were great, not always easy, but they held me accountable. I was also encouraged to make connections that I'm not sure I could have made at a larger school. I was able to take all my classes on the MC campus. A couple of times each semester, I would have to go to SRSU's main campus in Alpine to participate in labs, but I didn't mind that at all. I discovered how beautiful Alpine and the Big Bend region are. One of the most valuable experiences I had during college was working in the MC Biology Lab with Ethel Matthews, retired MC Biology Lab instructor. I learned basic lab procedures, which I still use in my job today. Collins explained that during the time she was taking SRSU courses, she didn't always attend on a full-time basis. I also worked at West Texas National Bank, starting out in the phone bank and eventually ending up in the mortgage compliance department, she said. Then, when I decided to get serious about college, I worked as a nanny. In 2015, Collins graduated from SRSU and was hired at Champion X, analyzing water from oil wells so that the team can design the best water treatment methods for a particular well. In addition to a fulfilling career, Champion X also offered Collins personal happiness. She met her husband, George Zamaripa, a fellow technical chemist, while they were working together, and they started dating in 2016. This past October, the couple were married at Museum of the Southwest. George now works for Baker Hughes, a competitor in the oil service industry, but Collins said that the competition is always friendly. It's fun being married to someone who has the same profession, she said. It makes communication easy because we understand all the technical lingo, so we talk shop a lot. The couple have two Chow Chow dogs, Gordon and Joe, and they enjoy taking the dogs hiking with them. Two of their favorite hiking spots are Big Bend and Palo Duro Canyon. Rebecca Bell is the Executive Director of Institutional Advancement at Midland College. Thriving United presents Easter Brunch at Midland's Longest Table. Thriving United has announced its second annual community-wide Easter service and brunch. Easter Brunch at Midland's Longest Table is set for April 9th at the Horseshoe Pavilion. Doors open at 12:30 p.m. Service begins at 1 p.m. Easter Brunch at Midland's Longest Table is an event where the community comes together in friendship and fellowship to dine. Hosting the second free Easter service and brunch is truly exciting. Whereas last year we fed and worshiped with 750 people in downtown Midland, this year we will exceed 1,000. Every person of any age or walk of life is invited to break bread with their friends and neighbors to celebrate the joy of the season, said Coleman Nelson, Thriving United Executive Director. This year's event will include a special appearance by Chad Mattson of the chart-topping Christian music band Unspoken. Mattson will share his testimony and join the Transform Band in an uplifting musical worship service. David McReynolds, pastor, churchwide operations at Stonegate, will open with an Easter message. The event will be followed by one of the largest Easter egg hunts in Midland. This free brunch, Easter Service, and Easter Egg Hunt is an event from Thriving United and a host of community partners, including Porter's Grocery, which provided all of the food, MPLX, and Southwest Specialty. Free event tickets are available at thrivingunited.org. This event does require a ticket. To reserve a space, visit thrivingunited.org. Thriving United is a 501c3 recovery community organization, RCO. An RCO works to mobilize resources within and outside of the recovery community to increase the prevalence and quality of long-term recovery from alcohol and other drug addictions and from other hurts and habits.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'll be reading the Odessa American from Saturday, April 1st, 2023, state and local news. Municipal Court Stays Busy in Odessa by Kim Smith. It's been just a little over 3 years since Odessa Municipal Court Judge Carlos Rodriguez and Director of Municipal Court Kimberly Joswiak came on board and discovered a bit of a mess. Not only did they discover a 150,000 case backlog, they also learned warrants weren't being issued when people failed to show up to court. Both issues are now being addressed, Joswiak said. Odessa Municipal Court handles all cases filed by the Odessa Police Department, UTPB Police, Odessa College Police, Medical Center Hospital District, Odessa Code Enforcement and Animal Control Officers, and Ector County Independent School District Police. What sorts of cases do they deal with? Public intoxication, disorderly conduct, minor in possession of alcohol, thefts under $100, building code violations, animal code violations, speeding, red light tickets, health code violations, and truancy. Joswiak said it turns out many, many of the backlogged cases go back decades. Rodriguez, Associate Judge Keith Kidd, court staff, and city prosecutors have been going through all of the cases to determine if they can still be prosecuted or if a collection agency might be able to collect outstanding fines and fees. So far, 53,000 cases have been cleared off their docket. Many of them have been deemed uncollectible, she said. Uncollectible is when a case is 15 years or older without any activity that's happened. The individual's never shown up, they've not made their payment, they've not sent in their documentation to get their case dismissed. Something stopped 15 years back, Joswiak said. We have cases when I got here from 1980. That's 40 years of cases in the municipal court. That's not usual. To prevent any future backlogs and to ensure justice is being carried out, Joswiak said Rodriguez and Kidd have also begun to issue failure to appear in court warrants. Up until they came aboard, warrants were not being issued to any degree that I can determine, Joswiak said. You can't force someone to come into the court. So we'll get the cases filed, and if they come in, great. If they don't, there needs to be some kind of accountability. We now have that accountability part, Joswiak said. In addition, Joswiak has created a non-resident violator compact with 43 states, so that when drivers from those states get into trouble locally and don't take care of them, their driver's licenses will be suspended back home. The only states not currently participating are Alaska, California, Michigan, Montana, Oregon, and Wisconsin. Joswiak is also working to clear up a small backlog of cases that built up between March 2020 and April 2022 due to COVID-19. There were some people who just didn't have the ability to participate in Zoom proceedings because they didn't have access to the internet or the ability to participate remotely, she said. As a result, she's rescheduling in-person hearings. Joswiak also shared some more recent case numbers. According to her, there were 65,722 cases filed in Odessa Municipal Court from January 1, 2020 through December 31, 2022. Of that number, 26,238 cases are still active, meaning they are currently completing their sentencing requirements or are scheduled to appear on a future date. Additionally, for the same time period, we have 5,817 outstanding warrants. This means, due to our case management since the beginning of 2020, we are not leaving any cases behind to become a backlog. They will either have a final disposition or will become inactive because they become warrant cases, Joswiak said. There are just under 500 juvenile driver's license suspension cases that are considered inactive, Joswiak said. Jury trials. As far as jury trials, Joswiak admits they've not had any for a couple of years, but there are two things about that she'd like to point out. First, municipal court has only seldomly held jury trials because most defendants secure plea agreements from prosecutors, Joswiak said. Secondly, bailiffs must be present at jury trials, and they've not been able to hire anyone. They've had more than 30 applicants go through a lengthy criminal background check only to take other jobs before the check is completed, or they've failed the background check completely, Joswiak said. We're working towards getting bailiffs, but we don't have one right now, and that is absolutely required for the safety of the judge, those citizens and prosecutors, defendants, everyone, Joswiak said. Fortunately, most defendants awaiting trial are not accused of crimes, she said. It's primarily traffic. I see a lot of people with a CDL driver's license that request a jury trial because they only have two options, guilty or no contest. And you pay with a conviction or not guilty and you're acquitted and it doesn't go on their driving record, which affects their CDL driver's license, Joswiak said. Joswiak said the city attorney's office does an amazing job when it comes to crafting plea agreements. Very seldom do we have someone plead not guilty and want to go to jury trial. They also have the option to go into a bench trial, and both our judges are completely caught up with all of our bench trials. Those are no problem. It's the jury trial where we need the bailiff that can actually move the jury in and out of the courtroom into the jury deliberation room. That's the issue, Joswiak said. Experience. Prior to coming to Odessa, Joswiak had served as a judge or justice of the peace in Washington County, Brenham, and Williamson County. She's also been a court administrator in Belmead, Corpus Christi, Allen, and Fayette. I'm very process-geared. There's steps to follow, there's rules, there's regulations, policies, and procedures, Joswiak said. The city of Waco hired her to create and implement an organizational chart and policies and procedures, she said. She had bigger issues in Corpus Christi. They had a huge problem with corruption, very clear. They fired the top four people in the court for corruption. A couple of them were indicted. They brought me in to clean that up, to finish cleaning that up, Joswiak said. She's had a pleasant experience working in Odessa, she said. I didn't come here to fix a court. I came here because I wanted to be in West Texas. I went to Texas Tech. I was born up close to Lubbock, Joswiak said. Arriving and finding a couple of issues that needed to be addressed was sheer happenstance, she said. Judge Rodriguez was right there with me, which is amazing. We actually have a really good team kind of feel here. We're kind of on that same wavelength. His ethics are above board, and so I don't have any problem going to him saying, I found a problem and I want to fix it. What do you think? He has never said, no, let's let that go. It's, we're going to fix it, Joswiak said. Joswiak has also uncovered an issue on the statewide level. The Texas Office of Court Administration installed new software about 3 years ago. One of the reports it generates has led people to wrongly jump to conclusions about the number of guilty pleas being entered in Odessa and at least a dozen other cities, Joswiak said. Instead of capturing the statistics in one place on the report, they are captured in at least three other areas, she said. She and several other court administrators are working with the software vendor to correct that. I did not want there to be any confusion that our judges are not working. They are definitely working, Joswiak said. Cases filed. Although statistics obtained from the Texas Office of Court Administration indicate an overall decline in nearly all types of cases filed since 2019, Joswiak said the court has no control over that. Law enforcement agencies' priorities often shift, and staffing levels also have an impact on the number of cases being filed, she said. Although she doesn't spend any time on Facebook, Joswiak is aware some disparaging things have been said about her court. They are unfounded, she said. I absolutely want to correct them, because it's giving a false narrative, and that's something we don't want, Joswiak said. She would have been the first person to blow the whistle if she'd found evidence of corruption, she said. There were many things that need to be corrected, and we are in the process of doing that. It's been easy because we've started with a fresh point, with a new judge, with me coming here at about the same time, moving forward, new standing orders, new procedures, new policies, new staff. If anyone has any questions, they should feel free to approach her, she said. We are very blessed to have two judges that are as focused and thorough and ethical as they are. That's not always the case. Over the years, I've worked with 20 judges as a director or administrator. I've had some excellent judges. I've had some that are mediocre, and I've had some that I kind of wondered about. Back in January, the Odessa City Council met in executive session to discuss opening the position of municipal court presiding judge and to begin accepting applications for the position. Several attorneys expressed their support for Rodriguez, and the matter was tabled. Obituaries. Melvin Blaine Etheridge. Melvin Blaine Tiny Etheridge, age 89, left for Beulah Land early March 29, 2023, in Odessa, Texas. He was born October 23, 1933, in La Mesa, Texas, to Ethel Naper and Ed Etheridge. Tiny is survived by his daughter Gail Woods, grandson Tommy Miller, and great-grandchildren Jake and Allie Miller. Tiny is preceded in death by his beloved wife Laverne, daughters Leanne Miller and Diane Etheridge, his parents, and brother Darwin, and Darwin's wife Dot. The family will receive friends for visitation Monday, April 3, 2023, from 5 to 6:30 p.m. at Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors. Graveside service will be Tuesday, April 4, 2023, at 10 a.m. at Sunset Memorial Gardens. If desired, donations in his memory may be made to two of his favorite charities, Meals on Wheels, 1314 East 5th Street, Odessa, 79761, or Mission Messiah, 1213 West 2nd Street, Odessa, 79763. Walter Jack Filler. Born March 5, 1939, passed away March 20, 2023. A military graveside service for retired Air Force officer Captain Walter Jackson Filler was held on Saturday, April 1, at the Valley Mills Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, the family requests that we honor Jack's lifelong spirit of generosity and his love of music by making donations in his name to the Texas Music Project. Joseph Vincent Gibson III. The Honorable Judge Joseph J. V. Gibson III passed away Friday, March 24, 2023 at Odessa Medical Center Hospital. Jay was born June 9, 1950 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to parents Dr. Joseph V. Gibson II and Harriet Wood Gibson of Kermit, Texas, both who preceded him in death. Jay is survived by his wife Rhonda, son Joseph Joe Vincent Gibson IV, daughter Jennifer Gibson Hebert, three grandchildren, and brother David Gibson. A celebration of life was held on Saturday, April 1, 2023. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made to the Clover House, an adult residential and outpatient aftercare facility, or the charity of your choice. Joanne Lynn Jo McLean. Joanna Lynn McLean went to be with the Lord on March 18, 2023. She was born January 2, 1961. Jo is preceded in death by her parents, Ray and Charlotte McLean, two brothers, Danny McLean and Jeff McLean. She is survived by her sister, Pam Horton, a son, Victor Null, and another son, Bradley Null. There will be no services scheduled at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to Acres West Funeral Chapel in Odessa, Texas. Placido Bernal. Placido Bernal, 65, of Midland, died Sunday, March 26, 2023, in Brownfield. A memorial service was held April 1, 2023, at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Carolyn Jeanette Denham. Carolyn Jeanette Denham, 75, of Odessa, died Tuesday, March 28, 2023, in Odessa. A graveside service was held April 1, 2023, at Sunset Memorial Gardens in Odessa. Jose H. Hernandez. Jose H. Hernandez, 71, of Midland, died Thursday, March 23, 2023, in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. April 6th, 2023, at American Heritage Funeral Home in Midland. Sharon Lyons. Sharon Lyons, 86, of Odessa, died Friday, March 24, 2023, in Odessa. Memorial service is scheduled for 11 a.m. April 15, 2023, at Sunset Heights Baptist Church. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, and Crematory of Midland. Julia Marcellus. Julia Marcellus, 86, of Gardendale, died Thursday, March 23, 2023, in Gardendale. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. John D. Mizzles, Jr. John D. Mizzles, Jr., 68, of Odessa, died Thursday, March 23, 2023, in Odessa. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Maria Valdez Rodriguez. Maria Valdez Rodriguez, 92, of Odessa, died Tuesday, March 28, 2023, in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. on Wednesday, April 5, 2023, at St. Joseph Catholic Church. Burial will follow at the Peaceful Garden section of Ector County Cemetery. The family will receive friends for visitation Tuesday, April 4, 2023, from 5 to 9 p.m. at the funeral home with the rosary at 7 p.m. Arrangements are by Odessa Funeral Home of Odessa. Virginia Bell Wade. Virginia Bell Wade, 87, of Midland, died Tuesday, March 28, 2023, in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Ireland Parent Has Charges Dismissed by Kim Smith. An Odessa man accused of assaulting another parent while they were picking up their children at Ireland Elementary has successfully completed a pretrial intervention program and has had his pending charges dismissed. According to Odessa Police Department reports and Ector County District Court records, Anthony Smith alleges he was in line at the elementary school to pick up his child on March 3, 2021, when Robert Steedham, 42, began to shout profanities and make threats against him. Smith told police Steedham got out of his vehicle and shattered a window on his vehicle. He further alleged Steedham grabbed him by his clothes, pulled him out of his vehicle, punched and kicked him before running over him with his truck. Smith told OPD officers he'd had to make a turnaround due to the long line. While trying to make the turn, he got in front of a Ford F-350, and Steedham got upset because he thought he was cutting in line. Two other parents told officers they saw Stedham hit the man, records show. Stedham admitted to confronting the other man about cutting in line and breaking the window, but he denied hitting him with his truck, the report stated. Stedham was charged in Ector County Court at Law with criminal mischief, a Class B misdemeanor, and he was indicted on an aggravated assault with a deadly weapon felony charge by an Ector County grand jury. Last June, court records show Stedham entered into a six-month pretrial intervention program with the understanding that if he successfully completed it, both charges would be dismissed. In addition to paying a $500 fee, Stedham couldn't drink alcohol or take illegal drugs, had to submit to alcohol and drug testing, was prohibited from going to bars and clubs. He was also required to submit a monthly report to pretrial intervention staff, abide by an 11 p.m. curfew, perform 30 hours of community service every month, and stay within the confines of Ector and Midland counties. In addition, Stedham had to complete classes, services, or counseling as deemed necessary by pretrial intervention officers, pay a $60 a month fee, and $983 in restitution. The criminal mischief case was dismissed December 21st, and the assault charge was dismissed Wednesday. Smith filed a civil lawsuit against Stedham March 2nd. He's seeking damages of $250,000 or less, court documents show.
Hello, friends. This is Julie, reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, April 2nd. World's natural gas needs highlighted. API calls on U.S., other G7 nations to respond, by Bob Campbell. The world has woefully dragged its feet on meeting the necessity of natural gas and the American Petroleum Institution, and Odessa oilman Kirk Edwards says it not only should be, but must get going. Noting that the API has just called on the United States and the other G7 nations to heavily invest in liquefied natural gas facilities and make others upgrades, Edwards said, it's critically important that we get the world in general to realize that natural gas is vital. Most of these G7 countries, including the U.S., have been overstressing alliance on solar and wind power, but I think everybody has come to realize from Russia invasion of Ukraine how important natural gas is to the energy sector, especially when the sun doesn't shine and the wind doesn't blow. Edwards said Monday that the tax incentives that have been devoted to promoting solar and wind power could go a long way towards helping these countries be confident and comfortable that their energy supplies will be there when they want them, by developing all aspects of energy production. We will need all sorts of energy moving ahead, including natural gas, oil, and renewables, said Edwards, who is one of the largest natural gas producers in the panhandle. I've got to be a smart blend in each of these, especially with Russia and China and how they're feeling about Ukraine right now. It has been an eye-opener for the world to see how important natural gas is. The G7 members are Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, United Kingdom, the United States, and the European Union. API President, CEO Mike Summers said from Washington, D.C., that his organization in the U.S. Chamber of Commerce has just called on Japan Prime Minister, G7 Chair Kumino Kishida, and his group to expeditiously act on policies to ensure that the International Committee to Replace Russian National Gas are achieved. The signatories of this letter signed the importance of natural gas and LNG and meeting shared energy security and climate objectives, Summers said. The energy and the financial reverberation of the water war have shown that these goals cannot be achieved without fundamental process on both energy security and climate change. Responsible development of natural gas and associated infrastructure is critical to the progress, and we look forward to working with the G7 ministers and head of state to ensure the forthcoming meetings reflect these realities. The API initiatives followed a meeting between industry leaders and G7 representatives during the recent Cambridge Energy Research Associates Week conference in Houston. Our Energy Security Forum discussed emphasized the importance of building the G7 June 22 statement recognized the important role of the increased deliveries of LGN can play in phasing out dependency on Russian energy, that invest in the sector is necessary to respond to the current crisis, Summer says. He said the first priority should be to work with the industry and encourage public and private investments in all segments of the natural gas supply chain and ensure sufficient development and ability of non-Russian supplies while ensuring consistency with long-term climate objectives. Summer says G7 should also cooperate on ways to improve guidelines and practice associated with the public finance of natural gas infrastructure and foster the efficient and timely review of permitting of the infrastructures. Additionally, he said, it should support the development of gas resources, include biomethane, renewable natural gas, and other renewable and low-carbon gases fuels. Other signers of the letter to Kishida were representatives from Asia Natural Gas and Energy Association, Energy Policy Research Foundation, Eurogas, the International Association of Oil and Gas Producers, and the International Gas Union and the LNG Allies. Burritos to be featured on Chopped by Michael Bauer. Chef Alejandro Burritos doesn't have his own show on the Food Network, but with the amount of times he's been featured on the network, he may have to start pinching himself. The co-owner of Curbside Bistro will be featured on the famous television show Chopped in the season premiere at 7 p.m. Tuesday on the Food Network. "I'm super excited," Burritos said. "I'm beyond the moon. It's crazy to think about. It's the dream of every culinary person. It's something that everyone in the cooking world wants to be a part of. There's a bunch of people that are fans of the show and love to just watch it and many not know anything about the cooking side." Chopped is a reality-based cooking game show series and is hosted by Ted Allen. The series pits four chefs against each other, and they compete for a chance to win $10,000. The show made its debut in 2009. It isn't the first time that Burritos will be featured on the show on the Food Network. Just 2 years ago, the Odessan was one of the contestants on the episode Beat Bobby Flay, a show that featured various chefs competing against Bobby Flay, which featured numerous celebrity appearances that was taped with a live audience. Just like appearing on the Beat Bobby Flay, Burritos said he has to go through the extensive application process to appear on Chopped. "It was like interviewing for a job," Burritos said. "You have to send pictures and a resume and pictures of the food and restaurant and explain why you should be on the show. It's stressful waiting for that until you finally get the yes back. The whole process takes months. You're worried and wondering through the whole time." Eventually, Burritos heard back from the executives. He would be on the show. He flew up to New York City in October, where they filmed the episode at the same studio as Beat Bobby Flay. "It was kind of crazy going back to the same studio," Burritos said. "The studio is huge. It was pretty surreal being back in the same green room and everything, but with a different show and cast and everything." In each episode of Chopped, four chefs compete in three rounds compete, where they attempt to incorporate unusual combinations of ingredients into dishes that are later evaluated by a panel of three judges. At the beginning of each round, the chefs are each given a basket containing four mystery ingredients. They're expected to create dishes that use them in some way. While Burritos isn't allowed to give spoilers about his upcoming episode, he did comment on the competitive nature of the show. "You never know what they're going to pick because its secret ingredients is so difficult," Burritos said. "It's really hard to prepare something like that. But considering the amount of time he's been featured on the Food Network in the last 2 years, Burritos said he would be a dream to have his own cooking show one of these days." "That'd be a huge blessing," Burritos said, "just to be on the Food Network. It's great. Coming from West Texas, we don't have a huge spotlight on us. If anything happens, it's usually in Houston, Dallas, Austin area. But sometimes I think there's a blind eye to the West Texas area. It's just amazing to be on the network." But he's also happy with his own restaurant, which he co-owns with his wife, Stephanie Burritos. He says they plan on having a watch party this Tuesday at Curbside Bistro when the episode airs. "It's on Tuesday at 7 p.m., which is a weird time, so we're planning out the logistic of it, but we want to do something for the community and have people come out," Burritos said. We don't have a huge building or a lot of TVs, but we're trying on planning the logistics of trying to bring stuff in. He's thankful for the support of all the customers in the community. I just want to thank all the Basin community and our customers and everyone who shares our posts, Brento said. Because of them, all of the amazing things that the customers share on Facebook, Instagram, has made us popular and helped us to have this opportunity. Whenever I send in my resume and bio, they see that they have such support we have. I wouldn't be here without them.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.